Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Podcast on Radio MD, iHeart, or wherever you download us from. Thank you for doing that. This is 1269B, and the B segments, as you probably know, are great guests. And we have an exciting one today, because being in an ER, an emergency room or emergency department, is always an exciting experience. It's something that you want to avoid if you're a patient. You probably want to avoid it if you're most doctors. And of course, the only people who really enjoy it are TV producers and movie producers. Ashley Elker, and Ashley is spelled a little different, A-S-H-E-L-Y, rather than L-E-E-L-Y, I shouldn't confuse you. Her website is A-Elker, A-A-L-K-E-R-M-D.com, and that's how you can find her on social media, has written a really interesting and humorous book at times, 99 Ways to Die and How to Avoid Them. It's a book from St. Martin's Press. I should say our sponsors are LifeFirstNaturals.com, the makers of things you probably don't find in an emergency room, Truebiotics, Bovine Colostrum, and Dye Rescue. Dye Rescue you might find because it really works on pediatric diarrhea, as well as when people have constipation, diarrhea, nausea, vomiting with the GLP-1s. That's Dye Rescue. It's really a pediatric drug. And for longevity.com. Ashley, 99 Ways to Die doesn't sound like a great title for a book, but I guess that's some of the ways you've seen people die in a emergency room or emergency department.
Well, it's the second part of the title is really important, right? It's 99 ways to die and how to avoid them. So this is 99 diseases that you do not have to die from. And a lot of these deaths are very scary and painful. So obviously something we'd all like to avoid. I chose the subjects, whether they were based on, you know, human interest or possibly because they were extremely deadly or maybe just because they're common. But I kind of go through things, everything from, you know, bacterias and viruses, vaccine preventable diseases to modes of transportation. The elements are in there, such as altitude and hypothermia, hyperthermia. So I kind of cover everything that's preventable, at least in my first edition here. I did eventually get cut off. My editor was like, okay, we have enough. Please stop writing.
Got it. And one of the common things that you do so well is tell stories. So how did you get involved in what I would call medical story writing?
Yeah. So you mentioned before the producers loving emergency medicine, and you're correct. The way that I really got into storytelling initially was becoming a medical translator. And initially, I was doing this for my family, who's distinctly non-medical, a bunch of business people and one circus performer, as I write in the book. But unfortunately, when I was in medical school, my mom passed away, and she was kind of my main reason for being interested in translating the language of medicine, because she was very ill since I was young with multiple things that caused her to have two open heart surgeries, brain surgery. She had lymphoma after I was born. So I had to repurpose myself, basically. And so I became a medical translator using stories to educate and engage the general public. And I did that initially through writing and TED Talks, and then eventually became a technical consultant and medical screenwriter for television and film, which I've done for over 25 films and TV shows now, including The Act, Handmaid's Tale. I worked with Station 19 for a little bit. I've done a lot of television shows that are kind of long running. I did CBS or NBC's Bull, not all of the medical shows, but worked on the medical components. And I saw in this the passive education that can happen and the power of storytelling, because that's always how we've passed down knowledge as human beings, anthropologically speaking. And it's something that we need to engage in now, because the onslaught of medical misinformation and social media They're just getting better and better at creating stories that are captivating and lies that are more captivating than the truth. And we have to fight back. And the best way to fight back is to become engaging storytellers, but using science as the basis for the story.
Well, I must tell you, one of my most emotional stories from, we're always in the emergency room at San Francisco General. I went to school at UC San Francisco and also did a residency there. But during medical school, it was a very tough surgical boss. The emergency room at trauma hospitals is a knife and gun club. Sometimes there's nothing happening, but you've got to be alert at all times, ready for action, so to speak, ready to help save as seconds matter. The chair of the surgery department at that time was Bill Blaisdell, and he was known for being very tough. And the lore and the truth, this happened during one of my years as a fourth-year student, the interns threatened to go on strike. Well, he would come in periodically to check on them, make sure they were there and paying attention. And one had fallen asleep on a gurney when one of the beds, when nothing was happening. He then tied the guy down on all fours, put a Foley in, which is a tube up the ureter, and put an NG tube down. And that guy stayed with it for 7 hours. And you can bet that guy never fell asleep again in the emergency room.
My God, that is terrifying. I think that that's probably illegal. So
it currently wouldn't be tolerated.
No, not
that's
at all.
Correct.
I'm glad we've changed
that's
some of those things.
That's how we used to train. That's how we used to make the docs stronger and better. But
yeah, I trained down south. Maybe we're a little bit weaker. I don't know. But training nonetheless is brutal for sure.
One of my stories, the other, you know, there always are great stories from an emergency room, an emergency department, if you're there long enough. But in any case, tell me your favorite story. In other words, 99 ways, there are 99 stories in the book. I have to get you to tell us a favorite one and put it obviously as what did you learn about how not to die from it?
Sure. There's a lot of stories in this book, and a lot of the stories come from time and work that I did abroad, whether it be in public health or medicine. I've worked in Cyprus and Tanzania, Honduras, France, Spain, Morocco. So I've worked all over the world in healthcare. So I've seen a lot of diseases, especially like in the parasite chapters that we don't usually see in the United States. A lot of the vaccine preventable diseases as well. I've seen, unfortunately, there's been a resurgence of some of those in the US now. But they're things that we really didn't have to see and didn't see during our training before. So I went abroad to see some of these things. So I would say that a lot of those stories are probably interesting, or they're interesting to me. But one story that's quite captivating and I think will surprise a lot of people is in the serial killer chapter. And this chapter did not happen in a hospital, but I did meet a serial killer out in the world. And one thing that's really odd is that the United States, for whatever reason, we have the most serial killers in the world. Either we're really good at catching them or we have a sociopathic society, one of the two. But there's a lot of serial killers in the United States. And one place that had never had a serial killer before was the island of Cyprus. And during my graduate school, I went there.
And let's make sure people know what a serial killer is. A serial killer is?
A person that has killed two or more people at like separate locations, separate times.
So it's someone who has gotten away with the first, at least, killing and come back to kill the second one.
Yes. I believe the cutoff is only two, which is enough, you know, I feel. But I was living on this island and working at a refugee clinic and doing graduate school at an institute that Harvard had opened there for multinational education. And I was just there for a short amount of time. I was there for a year. And during that time, I obviously made friends, and some of the friends that I made, we went out one night and we met someone's fiance, and I don't remember him at all. And recently, one of these friends who I'm still very close with asked me if I remembered going out that night and meeting that person. And I'm like, you know, I don't. But she showed me a picture of him and, you know, me and the rest of the group. So I had obviously met him. And it turns out that he was a serial killer. He had been killing foreign women and cutting them up into small pieces, placing them into a suitcase and dumping them to this, like, the only lake on this desert island in Cyprus. And he was eventually caught and jailed, obviously. And the thing that surprised me the most and what I learned from this, and, you know, if you're asking how not to die from this, serial killers aren't who you think they are. I think the television has kind of created them as this, first of all, diabolical geniuses, where most of them have average IQs. The FBI has looked at this. They're not smart people necessarily. And then additionally, they are often sold as recluses, and they're often not. They're people who are engaged in society. They're people that have spouses and children. So that was the other thing that I was really surprised by, that statistically is also true. They're usually narcissists, but they generally have families, or at least are engaged in society in some way. So that chapter is less based on my medical knowledge, but definitely something that surprised me and I kind of took with me.
What's the message of how not to die? Because you obviously, when you met this guy, did not realize he was a serial killer, and you were a foreign woman meeting this guy, one of his likely victims who might chop you up into small pieces.
Yeah, so it's a line in the book, but basically for me, I think I got fortunate because I come from a family of athletes, and my grandfather was a football player for the 49ers. I was a Division I water polo player. My sister was a Division I volleyball player. I was taller than almost every man I met in Cyprus. So I think what kept me safe is not my know-how and smarts, but rather my long femurs and stature. So if you don't have the ability to stay safe because you're a person that's built the way that I am, I suppose the lesson here is just to be careful and to make sure that you are, you know, with people that you trust and carry pepper spray.
Give me another good example. There's so many in the book. And we're talking with Ashley Alker, A-A-L, that's double A, LKERMD.com is her website, and also social media facilities are all AAElker.com. The book is, and subtitle is key, but it is 99 Ways to Die and How to Avoid Them. It's published by St. Martin's Press. Ashley, give us another example with a lesson on how not to die in it, if you would. Many of us aren't as strong or big or tough as you are.
So a lot of it's medical, right? So there's everything in this book from prion disease to tetrodotoxin-containing fish. You know, things like prion disease, which is the only infectious disease spread by simply proteins and is quite terrifying, is best known for creating mad cow disease, which is something that...
Yes, so we ought to tell prion disease in humans causes what?
It depends which prion disease, but mad cow disease causes neurodegeneration and death. But like, for instance, the genetic version of fatal familial insomnia is a prion disease that causes people not to be able to sleep for years and then death. So they're all fatal.
And so how do we avoid that?
I mean, the genetic component one, you would obviously have to get genetic testing in order to avoid having children with it. Once you have it, you have it. But avoiding prion diseases that are from beef, from cows, like mad cow disease, you would want to avoid those cows and exposure to those proteins. So for a long time, and still with some countries, it's illegal to export meat from the UK because of that, cow meat specifically. And one of the ways that we prevent prion disease in our cows in the United States is we do not feed them meal, cow meal, that is made from other animals, including cows, because that's how the disease started to spread. Is we were feeding the cows or sheep, and they had bad proteins in them. The bad protein caused bad proteins in the cow that then became beef, and then human, we'd eat that beef and get the prion disease. So this is, I mean, I'm not saying you have to become a vegetarian, but I am. It's not so bad. But if you want to avoid prion disease, you can avoid meat from countries that have had it in the past, or you can just avoid beef. But, you know, it's also important just to know, like, if there's a country that's on alert for prion disease, you definitely don't want to eat beef from that country.
And if you're in another country, you want to make sure they haven't imported meat from that country.
Exactly.
And if you're in a restaurant and traveling, I guess the message is ask them where their beef is from. If you... are beefy. I haven't eaten beef since 1994.
Yeah, see, we're safe. You and me know what we're doing.
Well, is there such a thing as mad chicken or mad salmon disease?
No, it is seen in some other mammals. Well, prion diseases in general can be seen in like sheep, et cetera. I don't know if it's, I haven't heard of it in like fish or anything like that, or poultry. They obviously have some of their own issues. Like certain fish carry things like tetrodotoxin. There's an entire, which is a toxin that basically causes paralysis and can very importantly cause paralysis of the muscle that you need to breathe, your diaphragm, and can kill you because of that. And tetrodotoxin is something that is kind of known for being in puffer fish, which is a type of sushi called fugu that's very popular in Japan and is a delicacy. Generally, you have to be trained and licensed to cut this type of sushi in Japan. And these sushi chefs will then make sure that there's a very small amount of tetrodotoxin by cutting certain portions of the fish, excluding portions of the fish like the liver and the ovaries, which are always really high concentration of tetrodotoxin and are illegal to eat in Japan. Other countries eat fugu as well, or puffer fish. Places in Indonesia kind of self-prepare it at home and it can cause issues. So there are still deaths from this, not infrequently in these countries, but there's also other fish and shellfish that can cause similar types of death due to like potency of toxins. Some of them are kind of very specific aquatic snails that have kind of overestimated the amount of toxin that they need to kill fish. And it's literally enough to kill hundreds of humans. So I talk about all these different animals in the book and how to avoid them.
Thanks very much. We've been talking with a fascinating author. She's been a fascinating storyteller for over 20 years. The book is wonderful, 99 Ways to Die and How to Avoid Them. It's published by St. Martin's Press. You can find out more about Ashley Alker by going to her website, alkermd.com, and hopefully avoid her emergency room. I didn't ask you to start off. You're in Washington, D.C., I assume, because you're an adjunct professor at George Washington. Are you in Washington, D.C.?
I'm outside. I'm in Northern Virginia.
And which hospital do we want to avoid you?
You want to see me. I am at Mary Washington Hospital currently. I'm the chair there, and I practice at a couple other places, but try and teach mostly public health at GW.
And again, her name is Ashley Alker, AALKERMD.com. For the book, 99 Ways to Die and How to Avoid Them. Thanks very much. We, of course, are brought to you, as usual, in this 1269B. The B's are always wonderful guests, as Ashley has been. And the A's, the latest medical news of the week and what it means to you. Next week, we're going to discuss two embargoed studies, one on how coffee and tea help prevent dementia, the other on how the 20-year follow-up of the Brain HQ speed of processing study that at 10 years had a 48% reduction in dementia development. And we'll also talk about the therapy from the AMBAR and Argentinian study on therapeutic plasma exchange and reversing Alzheimer's disease with it, therapeutic plasma exchange, and my personal experience with therapeutic plasma exchange. That's the 1270A, next week's A, the latest medical news of the week. The actual news, well, I guess there's three current studies, but the actual broader news of the week and what it means to you will return the following week. We're alternating on the 40 ways to reduce your dementia that have been shown in at least two or more studies in humans. Thanks, Ashley, for being here, but especially thank you, those of 50,000 of you or so who have downloaded us. I can't thank you enough. You're the reason we do this. We'll be back next week. Thanks again.